Where I make wine, I like to push the limits of where grapes ripen.
People just need to trust their own palate and not be concerned about what a critic says or what they read in the paper.
As a master sommelier, I mean, for me, at this point in my life, I'm kind of more in the Yoda stage.
My dad used to say when I was a little kid that the best wine you'll ever have is one you want to have another glass of.
I had a moment when I realized the power of wine. One day at a dinner, a bottle of Mouton Rothschild 1955 was opened and it just like silenced the whole table.
I'm so happy when a friend of mine sells a bottle of wine. And I love to brag about the wines that are being made by our friends because I'm so proud of them.
Farming is agricultural warfare.
I can't imagine doing anything else.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 173. This week we feature celebrity chef Fabio Viviani. Author, chef, TV celebrity, restaurant owner, and a winemaker. Fabio Viviani is a celebrity chef well known for his appearances on Top Chef, among other television shows. Born in Italy, Fabio has lived the American dream, and after spending a little time chatting with him, this looks like only the beginning. We spoke with Fabio last week from his base in Chicago. Today we welcome to our show, chef, and now winemaker, Fabio Viviani. How you doing, Fabio?
Very good, sir. Very good.
Fabio, thanks for taking the time to be here. I appreciate it. Where are you right now?
I'm actually in Chicago. We are shooting a web series for our website. We're in Chicago right now. I'm based in Chicago, though, so 90% of my free time is spent here. And, you know, unless I travel, I'm pretty much here.
We're just up the freeway, about 92 miles away from you here in Milwaukee, where it's just probably a little bit colder.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, it's pretty cold. It's pretty cold here, too, so.
Well, we're all stuck in the Midwest. It's just going to be cold. That's how it works, right?
Yeah, right.
Right.
We're good, though. We're not complaining.
Let's talk a little bit. Obviously, you're from Florence, Italy, and that's where you were born and raised. How long have you been in the U.S.?
I moved to the U.S. in September 2005.
What brought you to the U.S.? Was it just a want to check into different areas of the world in terms of food, that sort of thing?
No, I just wanted to. I want a change of pace. And in Italy, I was running a very big business, but the economy was going down. So I was just trying to get something new going on for myself. Moved to the United States, didn't speak a word of English. And fast forward the 10 years, really. We have several restaurants, winery, books publishing, got a good television deal, and we created a good brand for ourselves in this country. But I came here really for work, just trying to vacation maybe the first couple of months, but then I had to quickly find something for myself to do, and the rest is recent history.
Sure. And then what was the first Top Chef TV show?
It was different for me. I wasn't used to be on TV, and I don't watch TV at all. In Italy, I don't even have a TV because I was too busy working. So for me, it was a very different experience. Great exposure, which I have learned once the show was over, but very different from reality. When you talk about reality TV, it's never real. It's really an interpretation of reality because they only show a small portion of what you do. So it's a kind of a filter-alter reality. But great exposure for everything I was doing. So That's for now very good.
Other than the simple idea of, being in production and the time it takes to set up and, a lot of sitting around and waiting, hurry up and wait as it is. I mean, did you find it to be an enjoyable experience shooting the show?
Yeah, different. It wasn't painful. Let's put it this way. I think a lot of people say I'm very good for TV. I don't personally enjoy, sitting there all day, like hurry up and wait. But it's definitely a different experience. And it's very good exposure for the business. So if you take in consideration the exposure aspect and the fact that you're not really working, you're just hanging around all day and you might be working an hour or two, then yes, it's a good experience.
And then you ended up doing two more shows associated with Top Chef, correct? It was All Stars and another one, right?
Yeah, I've done a ton of TV. So we have done a lot of show for Bravo, a lot of show for NBC, a lot of show for Food Network. I'm doing a very good amount of TV. And again, it's all based on exposure and what's good for the business.
Sure, right. I can't imagine you do get a lot of time to watch TV.
And I don't. I wouldn't watch it even if I had time. I'm not a kind of couch kind of person.
You know, being you're from Italy, of course, yes. Europe has such a totally different attitude towards alcohol consumption. When was your very first experience with wine?
Yeah, I was 5 years old, and my grandpa poured me half a glass of wine. You know, and this is nothing to be shocked about it, because in Italy, wine is a social lubricant. It's considered as much as America considers soda. So your kid is going to get a little bit of wine diluted with water. You know, the alcohol is not a stigma in Italy. You don't have to wait 21 to drink it. You just have to be responsible. And socially responsible drinking is part of our culture. You know, in Italy, there is no person that's seeking to turn 21 to throw a party and get, you know, completely drunk or be allowed, finally, I can have a cocktail. Who cares? You know, in Italy, you have a cocktail when you go out. You have a beer when you have a pizza. And you have a glass of wine with your meal. Doesn't matter if you're 10, 15, or 20 years old, or 30 years old. Just part of our culture. And that's why alcoholism, that's why, you know, being an alcoholic and all this problem associated with heavy drinking, they're really not present in Italy.
Do you ever think you'll see that open-mindedness here in the United States?
I hope so. You know, I'm always a firm believer that, prohibiting people from doing something is actually almost incentivizing them in doing it, because not only they get the actual upside when you have a glass of wine, but they're also going to get a kind of a kick out of doing something they're not supposed to do. Think about college kids that they get together and they drink heavy alcohol when they're like, you know, 16, 17, 18, 19. It ain't right, because, you know, you shouldn't be drinking that much, but the reality is that how could be wrong for you to have a, you know, half glass of wine at a family meal or have a sip of a beer? You know, there is, I think that it comes from within itself. Everybody should be allowed to have the freedom of choosing if they want to have a glass of wine or not, but also the culture of responsibility and responsible drinking should be taught since, you know, you're a baby. And the reality is that a lot of people in America, they go like, no, you can't drink it. You can't drink it. You cannot do this. You cannot do that. But then when you're 21, who cares? Do whatever you want. You're 21. That's when the excess kicks in. Because, you know, they've been telling you no for your whole life, and now all of a sudden, do whatever you want. Of course you're going to overdrink. You got to get it out of your system. I never got drunk in my life when I was 21 years old because I didn't have to. You want a glass of wine? Sure, let's have a glass of wine. Can I have a beer, Dad, with my pizza? Sure, get a beer. Now, if I was going to drink 6 beer, my dad would be like, well, you're crazy. Why are you doing that? You're not doing that. That's stupid. Don't do that. You know, my age didn't prevent me from being responsible.
Sure. And part of the idea, too, is when you hit 21, if you have that big party, it kind of ruins your introduction to any kind of spirit or beer or wine.
Right. Because then you're not going to drink even good stuff. You drink cheap stuff because you want to drink a lot of it. So, it just, you know, I think it's a wrong culture, but I respect it. I don't make the law in this country. So I apply by it. We don't serve anybody under 21. And, you know, while I'm not going to serve a glass of wine to my kid in America, when we go in Italy, I'm not probably preventing my grandpa from doing so.
Well, I wonder, too, if you think that because people start drinking a little bit later, maybe it takes longer for the average American to sort of dive into wine and really start to understand it and appreciate it. Do you think it's a fair thing to say?
I think that America has discovered the culture of drinking just in the last maybe couple of decades. Right before then was an excess, was as much as smoking weed or doing drugs for them. You know, prohibition didn't instigate culture of drinking. Prohibition, all it did was introducing really alcohol to America and then tell them that they couldn't have it. Because let's not forget that all the lawmakers that were, you know, behind prohibition, they were the first one drinking, really. So the reality is that they were the one accessing to good alcohol and good spirits and good wine, you know. So I think prohibition introduced in America the habit of drinking without instigating the culture of it. In Italy, you get the culture before you get the habit. Because when you're a kid, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 years old, you see your family enjoying a bottle of wine for lunch or dinner, or your dad drink a beer with a pizza as a normal routine. You're not witnessing your older brother and his friend getting shit-faced in a basement, and you cannot participate because you're not 21. Exactly. Does it make sense?
That makes total sense, completely.
So I saw my mom and my dad having half glass of wine, and, you know, it wasn't a big deal. It's a half glass of wine. You're having a meal, drink a glass of wine. But also in Italy, we don't drink wine off meal. In Italy, there's not a lot of wine bar where you go and you're like, oh, it's 3 p.m, I want a glass of wine. No, you drink with your meal because it's a beverage. It's really what it is.
It's a food product to itself almost.
Yeah, it is. I mean, at the end of the day, you look at it, alcohol is fruit juice, right?
Sure. Exactly.
And while in excess, so there is some downside, as an upside proven for centuries, is actually good for you in moderation.
Sure, very healthy for you. So when you were living in Italy, were you making wine at all there?
Yeah, my grandfather had a small land, and we were producing, you know, he was doing his wine, his own wine, his own oil. But again, it was just for our family need and not a professional production.
So then when you came to the States, how long ago was it that you started your wine label here in the States?
Well, we started 3 years ago, but we haven't really started to sell it until about last year.
And from what I see, you're making about four different wines, correct?
Correct. Right now we make four different wines, and they're all under the Fabio Viviani wine collection. Cabernet, Chardonnay, red blend, and a white blend. And we are, we decided to go with California wine to begin with, because it's easier for America to understand the culture of American wine rather than start with something from Italy that they're not very familiar with the palate of it.
I agree. I think it takes a little longer for Americans to totally understand Italian wine.
I mean, you know, and some of them do, but it's not a big of a market enough to for us to make a profit. And as a company, the first obligation is to serve good wine. The second obligation is to make money off of it so we can keep serving them.
Sure. You got to make a profit to feed the machine.
If it makes money, makes sense.
That's right. Can you tell me how many cases you're doing total, approximately?
Last year was about 25,000 cases. This year, if everything goes in the direction it's supposed to be going, we're probably going to hit at least 50,000.
Oh, you're growing fast. That's great. So everything's made in California at this point then, correct?
Everything is made in California between Santa Rita Hill and Alexander Valley.
Oh, cool. Very nice. Good areas, that's for sure. And availability for people to be able to find these wines, where people can pick them up?
Nationwide website, Midwest, Whole Foods, California, Safeway, Florida, Total Wine, Publix. We have, we have different outlets, especially this year, that we will reach for availability. But I think the website, to begin with, is probably the easiest because you can find the nationwide, as well as Whole Foods, Safeway, and other few selected stores for now. But let's not forget that we did these last year. So, you know, it's been a great growth, but we are also trying to limit the overhead because we don't want to grow too fast. You know, we want organically grow in what it is a good brand in the United States. We don't want to overdo ourselves and shoot ourselves in the foot.
Sure. Do you think that an actual winery tasting room is something you have in the future?
We are actually building a winery tasting room facility in Sonoma. We are teaming up with Joey Reynoso, which is the guy behind some of the Cabernet that goes into some of the most important wine in America. He has a beautiful land in Alexander Valley, which you probably be aware, that produces the best Cabernet Sauvignon in America. And we're teaming up with him for the growth of the brand and a few other things.
So would the tasting room be in the Alexander Valley area, or?
The tasting room will be there.
Okay, cool. Have a rough idea when that might be open?
We are shooting for 2017 and 2017. So it's, we're building a big facility. So It will be fought out, but we're working on it.
Who is your winemaker?
We have we just switched a couple of people in our team. We had his name is Joe Otos. He used to work with Ravenswood, which is one of the most known brand in the United States for mid to higher end kind of wine. He was working with Ravenswood, and Joe Otos is our current last year and this year winemaker. We moved away from the previous 2014 partnership we had because we like to serve with the principle of Italy that you don't need to spend a lot of money to drink good wine. We had to find somebody that was willing to work with us in providing extreme quality for an affordable price.
Sure, absolutely, especially when you're starting out. And, of course, there's a lot of competition out there, but it doesn't hurt when you got a well-known name on the label, does it?
Well, it doesn't hurt, but I'm not selling wine because the name Fabio Viviani is on the label. We're selling wine because we are, creating a lot of value as well as having a very fair price point. That's why we are succeeding, because we're providing phenomenal value for a good price point. We did a lot of paper bag kind of tasting with no label, not people knowing that was our wine. And not only we rated always top three among wine with, price point of $40, $50, $60 compared to our, less than $15 wine. But as well, our wine, if we thought people said, hey, you're drinking our Cabernet Chardonnay, what would you pay for this bottle? Most of the people claim price above $20. So, some people $30, some people $40. We have a very good quality in our wine. We just won gold medal, Tasty Award, silver medal, gold medal for the red blend, the gold medal for the Chardonnay. So we're doing good wine. The juice is really good. Our red blend is 85% California Cabernet. It's 15% Pinot Noir. We're doing something with Merlot right now, but it's not the one on the market.
Do you think you're going to get into sparkling at all?
Yeah, for sure. We have a great connection with Italy, so we're going to for sure do something. For sure we're going to do something with some sparkling, likely Prosecco or the Lambrusco, but yeah, 1,000%.
Sure. So kind of off the subject a tad, what is it you like to drink? What's your favorite thing to relax with?
I drink wine all the time. So, I drink wine all the time. So I love a glass of wine whenever my wife is around. But if I'm by myself, I probably get a good sipping vodka. By myself with the movie, I'll get a glass of vodka. Yeah. I'm a good vodka drinker, but it has to be premium. So something like Tito for me would be a starting point vodka. There are a lot of very good sipping vodka out there, and some of them, it's got to be expensive and it's got to be very ultra filtered. It's got to be, again, sipping vodka, not cocktail vodka.
Yeah, sure.
And, I like port. I love a good port. But again, 80% of what I drink, 90% of what I drink, I say is wine.
With your experience so far in the wine business, and this is not to be negative, but just simply reality, what makes you crazy about the wine business? Anything in particular?
I think what makes me crazy about the wine business is the simple fact that there is a lot of misinformation. Again, the food is being demystified by all the food channel, food network, food shows out there. But wine is still almost like a question mark. People buy wine for price point or because they heard that the wine is good. Like most people say, I love a Pinot Noir. And they go at the store and they buy a Pinot Noir like they're all the same. Oh, I love a Chardonnay. And they go at the store and they buy a bottle of Chardonnay thinking that all Chardonnay tastes the same. There is a lot of miseducation about wine. So what we are trying to do with my company is to create a social phenomenon that people understand and rely to it from a standpoint of understanding what they're drinking, understanding how you pair that, and as well, just understanding what you have in your glass. And the things that drive me nuts about this industry is that most of the time when you say Chardonnay, you're really comparing a shitty Chardonnay with a good Chardonnay. You just call it Chardonnay. And that's a that's the hardest thing for me because, you know, I know wine enough to know that there is a big difference between a Cabernet and a Cabernet.
Would you say it's fair that there is a bit more of a mystery? Just like you say, so much has been exposed on TV shows with the idea of being a chef, cooking recipes, ingredients especially. Not so with wine, though, really.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. You know, the problem with that is that it's wine hasn't been exploited as much as the food industry have been. So for us, it's like, all right, it's really hard to let, you know, we got to spend a lot of effort in letting people understand that we're doing good wine. We're not doing like crap wine that you have to pay $5 or $6 for. There is a reason why.
Well, that's why we're here, to help educate people.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that.
Not at all. Thank you. I want to get a little current with you in terms of the restaurants right now that you own and operate. What are those restaurants?
My company now own and operate Siena Tavern, Bar Siena, Prime and Provision, two Mercato location, Public House and Bullenberg in Chicago. Then I have two California restaurants. I have three California restaurants. Well, I have five California restaurants. I have Osteria Cafe Firenze in L.A. We have two Mercato in San Diego, and we're doing something north area of San Francisco in a corporate building. We cannot disclose that yet. Then we're doing something in Detroit. We're doing something in Miami in 2017. So we have about a dozen operating restaurants right now, and a few more will come.
Is it for you? I mean, obviously, I'm sure you're involved with the idea of what's going on the menu, but do you get involved with the wine list in any way, shape, or form?
Yeah, of course. I get to say whatever I want to say. Not every time I'm heard, because the reality is that we have more people and we base our selection by popular demand, not just because I'm pretty or whatever other reason people want to impose their will. For us is a matter of making sure that whatever we do has a sense and please the most people.
That sounds like a good way to do it. Fabio, for our listeners who'd like to learn a little bit about you online, to go to your website, what is your website? How would they do that?
My website is fabioviviani.com. My wine website is fabioviviani.wines.com. My new entrepreneurship academy, which will be launched in the next couple of weeks, there is a little glimpse right now on online, is knowhowleadershipacademy.com. We are planning to teach entrepreneurship and create a lot of free courses and free material when it comes down to teaching people how to tackle business and teach people how to be smart about business. Again, there is a lot of trial and error, and we are trying to avoid those by, you know, sharing our education and our success in simple step guide on how to do this and how to do that. The reality is that it's a big working project, and it's in progress right now. But we're getting there. So technically, if you want to seek for entrepreneurship and business education, that will be very affordable if paid content and mostly free. We are the destination in the next 6 months. We will probably build one of the largest library and video library of courses and educational material for entrepreneurs. Know-how Leadership Academy.
That's excellent. Well, congratulations and good luck with that venture.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for taking the time, Fabio. I appreciate it. I wish you continued good luck in the future, and I hope to be able to stop down at one of your restaurants in Chicago soon.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and I look forward to talking to you soon. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Learn more by visiting fabioviviani.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2015.